Blog Talk Radio.
And then one day you looked at me, threw your arms in the air and said you're crazy. 5 days you tackled me, I still got the look when I'm so funny. Then 3 days in the afternoon, you realize it's not my fault, but only too soon. Say you've forgiven me, and now I'll sit back and wait till you say you're sorry.
To a mellow summertime Wednesday night here.
Oh, you are something.
That just slid out like a fog across a lake. Yeah, that's a theme song. Hey, play it again. Yeah. I gotta get used to it.
All right, hold on. Let me get it. Here we go.
And then one day you looked at me, threw your arms in the air, and you're crazy. 5 days you tackled me.
Here we go. There you
mm-hmm.
go. It eases you right in. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Look, pull up a rock. It's summertime. Sapiens.
That's right.
We have arrived again at the Wednesday hour that we leave the world behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we go into this little cocoon that we talk to ourselves in. I'm Philippi, and that's Chris Aval agreeing with me over there.
Yes.
High atop the mountains of Westchester County, or whatever county you're in.
In Patterson.
Hey, even better.
Yeah.
Whatever the frick. So, number again tonight, if you want to participate, 646-478-4847. We're talking about the big C, cancer. Cancer! You got cancer? Remember that got milk?
Yeah.
You should have a got cancer thing.
Because
just about everybody has it. You know. In fact, the Giants actually removed one from their locker room yesterday.
Yeah, so I hear.
The tumor of a Plexico Burris.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You know, when people use that word, I mean, that's one of the things that's so funny about it, is that you go back, I started talking about this a couple days ago on the blog We Don't Hate, blogsoma.net, on Sunday, my Sunday essay that nobody reads.
I read it.
Well, there you go. We're just, you know what it is? It's just like one of those correspondence things, like John Adams had with Thomas Jefferson, only we're using a blog. I just keep writing letters till we're 100 years old. And we'll both die on, like, you know, on Halloween or something to honor our woundness. Jefferson lives. Pontificating about the subject of stigmas in the culture. And you go back 1950, it was a stigma to get pregnant if you weren't married. You
mm-hmm.
left town. Right? There was no abortion option. There was no adoption option. Adoption option? So you basically got knocked up, and then you were shipped out of town. Banished, even. And your family was shamed for decades.
Right.
Then in the 60s, the pill came along. No prego. Right? Then
right.
the next thing that became a stigma. Stigmata? No, a stigma. Was now you had... someone who was a war veteran from Vietnam, and they hated you.
Mm-hmm.
And they would throw things and spit at you and call you a baby killer because you served in the Army. Now, of course, if you don't support the troops, they stone you and throw rocks and garbage at you for that. You know? And it goes on and on. But cancer took a right turn somewhere in the last 20 years because we declared war on it along with about everything else in the 60s. You know, poverty, air, everything. We declared war on everything. And for some reason, maybe it goes back to the Surgeon General in the 60s, I don't know, is that there started to become this movement, and I hate this freaking word, to prevent disease, preventative medicine. And Prevention Magazine was a big thing. I remember Reader's Digest, sort of, prevent this, prevent that. And it morphed into this whole cottage industry of preventing any disease you could ever have by doing certain things. Eat this way, walk this way, you know, jump up and down. It was a million things. But cancer was one of these ones that they couldn't get around because everybody thought cancer was hereditary. And you were just, that's what your family got, and you were prone to cancer. Cancer, cancer, they'd say. I remember the Archie Bunker had the big C, you know. It was always a big deal. And it was a death sentence. See, it's like sickle cell in the black community, you know. That's it. It's like they throw their arms up. And for some reason, biology has this way of making us really spooked because it gets you at your phylo roots, at your phylo short hairs, where you go, I'm going to be sloughed off this planet one day like an old dog, you know. And because of that closed identity, single skull mentality, cancer became the boogeyman. And, you know, cigarettes became carcinogenic and red dye number two. I remember my mother slapping a fruit drink out of my hand as if it was napalm at Point Lookout. I went to the machine, you know, the big juicy machines. You could see the juice inside. Give me one of those, you know. So you fill it up, but I'm about to take a big swig. It's a 900 degree day on Point Lookout. You know, forget about the sun poisoning I had endured without any sunblock. That was no big deal. I was red as a lobster. So I'm about to take a drink of this fruit drink, this lovely fruit drink that the Point Lookout food stand was serving. The nutrition in that stand today would be basically pick your tumor. You want some nitrates? How about some red dye number two? Red dye number three. So I'm about to take a big swig, and she goes, I can't get it. It's cancer poison. Bang. Knocks it out of my hands. Now I'm covered in ice and red stuff, and I'm sunburned. But I had no cancer that day in my body.
That's right.
And then I got this big lecture about the red dye number two is going to kill us all, you know. And then they got into saccharin. You know, you can't have the sugar because you got to have the saccharin. Sweet and low, the saccharin. Oh, you can't have the saccharin. And they've been having us hop from one foot to the other for 40 years, and more people have cancer now than ever.
Yep.
What the hell did they ever prevent? 646-478-4847. I, myself, had cancer. Cancer? Cancer! And I tell you, the doctors, when they tell you that you have cancer, act just like that. All right, Dr. Litvak, if you're out there, 646-478-4847. Remember me, the one who laughed at you when you tried to panic me? So if you didn't read it yet on the blog We Don't Hate, blogsummer.net, I tell a little story about a young man hit in the throat with a hockey puck.
That's right.
Yes.
That had a hurt.
My cancer story. Oh, it hurt because the guy was about 10 feet away, and he took a slap shot. And I was playing, this is deck hockey, so it was an orange ball, very similar to a lacrosse ball, kind of solid. And it had, you know, a certain kind of edge to it because it was beaten on by a million people. So the ball came at you, and it had a lot of cuts and slices in it. So, and it hit me, kind of grazed my throat. And I remember it hit me, and I thought, you know, you kind of turn away, and the puck comes in your throat. I was playing goalie. And it hit me, and I heard it hit the fence behind me, so it didn't go, it didn't go around me. But I was... You know, it's almost like getting clocked in the old nutsack. You get a little bewildered when you get in the throat. So I couldn't breathe or swallow for a second, and I just felt that like heartbeat. You know, when the heartbeat moves from your chest to somewhere else, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And I went down to one knee. I remember they blew the whistle. Oh my God! Hit my throat, and I got a fever. Right away. That was 195 degrees. My head was the Sahara. Because I got hit right in the old thermostat there, thyroid.
That's right. Yep.
And so what happened was is that my body went crazy trying to insulate itself. And this was I was 16 years old. Now, the short story of that night was I woke up the next morning basically soaking wet from head to toe because it was out in Smithtown. I was basically taken out by my older hockey friends and went to a tavern after the game, and the car was unable to start. It was a long night, let's just say. So I crawled into the house, and I didn't even make it in my bed. I fell asleep on the couch in my clothes from the night before. And my mother, the same one who was knocking the red dye number two out of my hands, comes out to go to the bathroom and sees me on the couch and lets out a scream that to this day I will jackknife if I hear it again. It was a scream that you wouldn't hear in a horror movie.
Wow.
Because my throat looked like someone had painted it red, blue, purple, and green. It was like some kind of a weird, you know, Italian flag going on there. And it was deep. It was like a tattoo. because it had shattered the capsule, see? And all the blood had kind of pooled overnight. And I had a black and blue on my throat for about 6 to 9 months of different gradations of colors.
Holy cow.
It never went away. It was like the black and blue from hell, and I never went to the doctor for it. This is the same woman that was slapping the drinks out of me. Eh, it's just a black and blue. Put ice on it. It never went away. It was like the swelling went down, but the skin was always a little off, you know. And it was like kind of green and kind of yellow and then kind of a little black over here. And it just never went away. This is, I'm 16. So long story short, it goes away finally. And I forget about it. I go through college. Now I'm in my 20s. And you know that game, a quarters game? You play with the, you know, in the bars?
Mm-hmm.
Very good at quarters. Well, one night not so good, and we were playing pitcher's night, so you have to drink a whole pitcher when you
oh,
lose.
Oh, God.
Yes. That was when men were men. So I go through this whole spiel. I drink the pitcher. Now I have to go, balance the scale, so I go to the bathroom. I look in the mirror, and my Adam's apple is moving in my right ear. Everything is moved over to one side like a bad typewriter.
Holy
and
God.
You're a little inebriated, so you go, oh, my. What's this?
Oh, not the oh my, please.
Oh my. So I'm pushing on it, you know, and what happened was the ectopic thyroid that had spread like shrapnel around my throat got all excited from all the iodine from the beer, and it poofed up like a bunch of little shrimp bullfish all over the place. Right? So my neck looked like a nasty crunch over there, or a little fish under there.
Okay, that's gross.
It was as nasty as hell. So I come out, I go, look at my throat. My friends go, like my mother. So that was in the summer. It went down again, and it was gone. And then I come back to go to the nuclear medicine facility at Long Island Jewish Hospital, a fabulous institution of paranoia, and they told me I had Hodgkin's disease in 2 seconds. Right? So I said, I don't think I like that diagnosis. So I went down the hall to the endocrinologist, who was mildly amused by my situation. Now, the way they set it up at Long Island Jewish Hospital was that you went to the pediatrician guy first, then you went to the internist. It was all the same little wing there. So I was going doctor to doctor to doctor. No one could figure out what it was. So I said, let's do a biopsy. Let's do a needle biopsy of it. So you got to go to the nuclear medicine.
Oh.
All right. This is the day before, the day after Thanksgiving. Day after Thanksgiving. 1987. I'm in there, right, poking around. He gets the fluid. He comes back, and they say, we got a problem. Looks like we have a neoplasm.
Uh-oh.
Neoplasm! That's, fancy nuclear medicine talk for we've got a new growth in there. We don't know what it is. Now, I remarked about the shrimp-like puffiness of my throat from years before and the summer before that, the quarters and the whole thing. I said, I got injured here a while ago. And that doesn't matter to me. And they went in their little huddle, and I found myself in Albany in a hospital up there doing a nuclear medicine iodine uptake test, which was funkophilia, that nastiest stuff you ever want to drink. And they go, now we got to do a CAT scan. And it kept progressing. And my parents, both tangentially in the healthcare industry, my mother, of course, being a nurse, and my father selling stitches to hospitals, were giving me the, it's nothing, you're too young to have cancer, right? The guy goes through the CAT scan, and the guy says, the neoplasm is 2.7 meters wide. That has to come out. That could sit on your carotid. So I said, what happens then? Well, we take out half your thyroid. You take out half my thyroid, a baking soda, a blocking powder, a what? You know, I was a little, I'm 21 years old. So the Giants are on a Super Bowl run, as they are this year, right? So I get in the car, and I decide I have to get some help here to figure out what I'm going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Winwood comes on, and he's singing Back in the High Life again, right? As I'm driving out of the Long Island Jewish parking lot, and I said, you know what? Screw it. I was a student of chiropractic at the time. I said, this is an obstruction to health, limitations of matter under the, because you had an injury, and maybe you just take all this gunk out of here, you still got the other half of your thyroid, you're going to be fine. So I circle around and sign myself in. Take this sucker out. Check myself in the hospital. So I go upstairs, I get on my little bathrobe thing, call my mother. Hello, Mom. I'm in the hospital, and I'm having an operation.
Oh, my. She must have crapped herself.
It was an interesting conversation. You can run! It was, you know, she can't slap the red dye out of my hand anymore. I said, Ma, I got cancer. She was in the hospital in about 4 seconds. Philo to the hilt, running up and down the hall like a cockatoo. And my father was like, you know what's best. Call me when you're done.
Spoken like a true XO.
Yeah, he had no, he just said, he goes, probably just some busted blood vessels. It'll be nothing. He wasn't going to be in touch with it. That was fine. So I checked in the hospital with my Healing Hands book about the story of the Palmers to read, my little vitalistic little Bible at the time. And the next day, rip. And the surgery was kind of interesting. I think I told you the story about the anesthesia.
You never told me any of this.
This is interesting. Well, they couldn't get me to knock myself out. They kept giving me more and more anesthesia on a drip, and I kept laying there like, Doc, I don't know what you got in that thing, but unless you got Alabama Slammers, I ain't going out. So he says, start counting backwards from 100. I get all the way down to like the 30s. I'm still wide awake. So then it hit me, right? I sat up on the table. I grabbed, and this is Litvak telling me after the fact because I have no memory of this. I grabbed him by the lapels, and I screamed, Wobbits! Everyone's turning into Wobbits! And out like a light.
What did you say?
Like the Bugs Bunny line. Rabbits. Everyone's turning into rabbits.
You did not do that.
That's what I did.
Surgeon.
That's what I did. I grabbed him by the lapels, and I screamed it, just like Brody. And I went out like a light. Like Daffy Duck. Out like a stone cold, just a cadaver. And they could not operate on me for 20 minutes because everyone was laughing so hard.
Oh, my God.
They said they've never in their whole life seen anyone go from totally wide awake to that to out. All right? So they cut me open, take the sucker out. Now I'm in the recovery room, and you can hear and you could feel, but you can't move because you're all anesthetized. And my heartbeat was going crazy on the anesthesia. My heartbeat was like, you know, it was like 220. My blood pressure was like 220 over 110. And they're freaking out. My pulse is like 120. And they're having a reaction to the anesthesia. And they're going, I don't know if I can take much more. They're not calming. They know you can hear. You're laying there. And the nurse is going, she's like, he's a young man. Why is his heart doing this? What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sitting there going, I'm laying in my body. And I'm saying, this is the way it's going to end, eh? I say okay for the surgery. And my heart gives out after the operation. And I got so mad. And this is another thing I had to find out after the fact because, you know, I wasn't totally awake for this. I got so mad they said what I did was, you know Eddie Munster when he has that fit?
Yes.
And he pulls the beard off the guy when he figures out he's a fake?
Yep.
Yeah. I, on the table, hooked up to an IV, got up and said, you know, pretty much like Eddie Munster, No. No, like a loon. And uncoupled myself from the IV and began to dismantle the recovery room.
Mm.
And they had to horse collar me down. Now, I'm anesthetized, and I can't move my head, but I can move my legs and my arms. And I was completely out of my mind. And they were really concerned because, you know, they had cut my neck, my carotid, just sticking out of my throat. And I had a fit. And I started, I didn't want to die. So I was punching everything to prove that I was alive. And I apparently clocked one of the nurses with an elbow and almost broke her nose. The other bloody lip. Yeah. So that was my cancer experience. So now we go a week later to when, you know, going back to get the stitches out. I was working in a bowling alley at the time. Underground bowling alley. I recommend it. I thought yesterday, right? Chit-chit. That maniac?
You didn't.
No,
we have a lot to talk about, apparently.
Yes, well, this is therapy tonight for me.
Yeah.
646-478-4847. The cancer story continues. I leave the underground bowling alley to get my stitches taken out, and I'm a little moody, not really happy, because the stitches towards the corner, and you could still detect it on my little scar here, were beginning to unravel. And I could kind of see into my throat, like a little kangaroo pouch.
Oh.
You know, not something you want to see. So, you know, I could start feeding myself peanuts through here, this son of a bitch.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it was nasty. I had the gauze over it and stuff, you know. But every time you peel it back, you're looking. And it was, the skin was really numb there, right? Because the nerve endings were still kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
So I'm driving over there, and I'm getting depressed. And this happens, they don't tell you, but it happens to every cancer patient when they have an operation, because even if they take a sick, depraved, necrotic part of your body out, your body mourns for it. They don't tell you this. So you're going through the sort of like the phantom pain thing. So I'm going, I'm not whole anymore, I'm a thyroid, the pocky pocker, and I'm saying, this is it, I'm 22 years old, I can't believe this, the cancer, it was a short life, I screwed it up, and I'm going through this whole thing. I'm still doing this at 44 almost, right? I do this every day.
What's not going to go there?
So I'm going to make the left to go up this street to go to the hospital, and a car blows a light. And I swear to God, it's airborne, like Starsky and Hutch, this white car, never forget it, Chevy Impala. And it would have, if I had just gone through the light like I was supposed to, it would have flattened me like a pancake, dead, dead, dead dog.
Jeez.
And I hit the brakes instinctively, as my Soma would tell me, right? And basically saved my whole life there, right? Car goes by, now I'm in the intersection, rush hour traffic, put the car in park, didn't move. People honking, honking, tapping on the window, honking, and I'm grabbing the steering wheel like as if I'm going over the Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Right? After about 15 minutes of this, a cop comes by with a little billy club. He taps on the glass and he says, son. And I'm just, like I'm saying, I'm lockjawed. But I just, couldn't move. Coaxes me out of my little coma, and off I go to the hospital. Now, Litvac thinks he's going to scare me. This is what I told you. I laughed at the guy. Right? He comes in, he's a very serious guy, he's an XO, and he's searching, I mean, what are you going to do? And he goes, I was about 10 minutes late, and he's standing there, and he says, sit down right here. I just got off the phone with pathology. They found two malignant cells. You have follicular cancer. Cancer! Dun, dun, dun! And I literally said, dun, dun, dun! And I said, phooey. It's on a slide. You sucked it out of my neck. Thanks, Doc. I'm done. Take the stitches out. All right? And I didn't even bother telling him about the car thing, because that completely cleared my head of any cancer problems. I could be taken off this planet in any second.
Yeah, that's true.
So this fear, cancer is completely wrapped up in fear that is somehow you're not going to get to live the whole damn thing. The movie might end prematurely. Bullshit. You can walk into your bathtub, and someone can knock the radio away, and it's all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I loosened up on the whole mortal coil thing right there in that moment. And they tried to scare me. He goes, what we got to do is take out that healthy side. And he said it. Your healthy side of your thyroid. Scan the rest of your body for cancer, cancer, cancer. And then you're clear. Now, I went to Sloan Kettering.
Oh, boy.
Sloan Kettering. But by the way, play the theme song again, because that leads right into Sloan Kettering.
Okay. All right, here we go. Hold on 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go.
Got to sum life by that last little bit. That's exactly what I felt. I floated into the Sloan Kettering, and I was 22 years old, and I'm sitting in a room of the living dead. Everybody in Dr. Killpatient, as I came to call him, because he had that little mirror on his head.
Yeah.
everyone in there was 80 to 1,000 years old. They all had the little voice boxes, hello, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all near dead. They were all in wheelchairs. They were all basically barely able to hold their head up. And here I come. Right? So he had this bedside mentality that was right up there with the way a rectal exam goes at Gitmo. He would grab my throat as if he wanted to pull it out, and he would feel around for nodules like he's playing a freaking flute. He's in there dialing around. All he ever said to me was, you keep us up, you're going to die. You keep us up, you're going to die.
Because
I refused to take the surgery, and I refused to take the drug of choice at the time, which was Synthroid.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
The magical Synthroid. So I said, you know, I read a lot about this drug. I don't think it's a healthy drug. His mentality was called suppression therapy, a nice term, right, which basically meant that the tumor was not caused by the hockey puck. The tumor was caused by my pituitary showering too much thyroid-stimulating hormone on my thyroid, which managed to build a tumor, shrapnel it all over my neck because of this overproduction of the hormone. I totally didn't believe what he was doing.
That is ridiculous. It's not even logical. What's wrong with those people?
Suppression therapy at Sloan Catering.
So
I said, you know, can we do some blood work? We argued for a year, and then I got really bad advice from a chiropractic guy in Iowa when I was in school. And he says, you know what? He goes, it's going to cause you more stress than I have to go back and forth with these guys because you're in a five-year window with cancer. Cancer, five-year window. So I said, you know what? Take the med, just get adjusted, and you know, you'll be okay. So I went back the next year, and my little strategy was to take – they tested me in July and December. I come home in the summer from school. I come home in the Christmas time, and they would test my blood. And it takes 30 days to get the Synthroid out of your bloodstream. So I would take 30 days off in June, and then they test me in July, and my hormone levels were fine, which meant the left side was working, right? They didn't know. Then I would do a control and take it in November, take the drug, and test it again in December, and the levels were fine, which meant the drug wasn't suppressing crap, right? So I said, you know, I'll keep doing this. And then the fifth year, I took the drug the whole way through as a control, right? Still coming up normal numbers. So I said, okay, I've completed my 5 years. This is around 92. I was out of school at that point. And I said, I'm checking out of Cancerville. Cancer. Oh, no, you're not, young man. You're on that medication the rest of your life. And I said, I don't think so. Here's the evidence, sucker. And I slapped it down. You see these four Junes? There was July, there was no drug in my body the entire month of June, which meant the left side is working. At that point, the allopath sent in the MPs, and I was ushered away. That's when I joined the AMA. Medical advice.
My goodness.
I had to sign myself out of every floor of Sloan Kettering for hours. They took everything, blood, x-rays, everything. I was lit up like a Christmas tree. And I left, and that was the end of that. And the thing is that they could never justify suppression therapy to me because I was hit by a hockey puck, as I kept reminding them.
Right.
So I asked Dr. Litvak, and now that I was out of school, for his surgical notes, seeing as, you know, I was a doctor now, too. A doctor to doctor. Doctor, you know that thing? We thought we had that here. Doctor.
No, we don't, but I remember.
Spies like us, yeah. That's what it was
playing
like.
Playing in my head.
So imagine me calling this schnook about 6 years after the fact. Hello, Dr. Litvak. Hello, this is your old client, Filippi. I remember that for Sloan Kettering. Because you wanted to rip out the other side, the healthy side of my thyroid. I'm curious now. I've been through some training. Yeah, I could have the notes, you know, my surgical notes. Just want to know, you know, what your thinking was at the time. And, you know, nice safe, gave them to me. Faxed them up, actually. And there, in the notes, the morning of the surgery, apparently there was a meeting between all those doctors I went to visit. The one that thought I had Hodgkin's. And they all had a big round table discussion because they never had a 22-year-old kid check themselves into the hospital and say, rip out this stupid tumor. They were all freaked out by it. Liability, you know, because I hadn't, you know, I'm old enough to do it myself, but most of them go in with their folks. There were three etiologies, which is the other thing in cancer that they don't tell you about, the cause of it. Everything's carcinogenic. One was genetics, and they crossed that off. The other one was that there was a hormonal imbalance, which would be his theory, which I would have millions of other symptoms. And the third was trauma. And in the parentheses, it would say neoplasm, right? Remember the woman in Albany called it a neoplasm, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she knew about the trauma, which is what's supposed to happen when an organ gets hit. It swells, you know, like when you get socked in the mouth. It's called inflammation, but I broke the capsule, so I had ectopic thyroid spilled all over my neck. So, of course, the iodine you know, chirped it up and caused all kinds of constriction. So what neoplasm means is called a space-occupying lesion. In other words, garbage. All right? So it didn't affect anything in terms of my thyroid hormone because the left side was doing its job, and you only need half to do put it out there. Of course, it takes more effort. You'd like to have two kidneys rather than one, but you can function on one. So my body had compensated. Young shape that I was, plasticity that I had, and it was only the right lower lobe with the little butterfly thyroid that was hit. You know, and that had repaired itself. So basically, it cleaved off the bottom lobe of the thyroid on the right side. That had been scattered to the winds, and I had kind of basically kind of built like a stumpy on that side. That was working. I sealed the capsule off. And the argument was that a blood vessel had gone through the tumor and it was going to spread to the rest of my body. And basically, you're going to love this. Well, this just came back to me just now. Long notes from the endocrinologist about this whole story about the blood vessel, right? And the surgeon had crossed it off and wrote nebulous argument. That's one of the reasons why that...
That's my word, baby.
That's why that word pisses me off. I'm just doing therapy here.
So now we know.
Nebulous. Yes, there you go. I got to the... See?
See, because you were like... You were vicious when I used that word.
There you go. Nebulous
now
argument.
Son of a
nebulous
bitch. Nebulous argument. Wow.
646-478-4847. Anyone else with a cancer story? We got a little time left. So... Now I'm in my, you know, salad days of practicing chiropractic, and one of the first cases I get is a dude with multiple myeloma, bone cancer, right? And he had hurt his clavicle pulling a tent peg out of the ground in his yard, comes in with shoulder pain and whatever, and I see this big old lump on his it looked like someone had put like a horse hoof in his chest. I said, what's this thing? It's all raised up. He goes, I don't know. It's kind of red, kind of sore. I said, you know what? Go down the hill to the White Plains Hospital, where all the healthy people are, and get yourself an x-ray. I don't think I like that bone. All right? So I'm down on Long Island getting adjusted at my chiropractor. Right? Get the phone call. It's multiple myeloma. Cancer. All right? And the doctors over there were astounded that dopey chiropractor had looked at something and said, that looks funny. Go get it checked out. But that basically is the only diagnosis you have as a chiropractor is that doesn't look right. You know, so you don't have to name it. You just have to go, that doesn't look right. And the guy, the patient, you know, had to make a decision. How do I deal with cancer? I told my little story. I said, listen, you're either going to burn it, cut it out, or drug you to death. And he says, I don't like any of those options. I said, all right. Bone is a tissue. Tissue responds to environment. You have to create a healthy environment for your tissues. Right? That was my first guy. I did not treat the cancer, the New York State Chiropractic Board. I created an environment so that his body can regulate the overstimulated bone growth that resulted from years of stress on that bone. Bone is living tissue, just like everything else. And that's the beginning of how I began to understand the salutogenic, health-inducing side of cancer. Because everyone puts cancer on the dark side. They think it's a disease. It is a natural, I hate to say this, a natural, inevitable process of mutating your cells in case the environment changes. You must proliferate your cells. You must grow stem little cells. But if you don't regulate that growth, you have the space-occupying lesion. Now, those are the ones that happen inside the tissues. The ones that get outside the tissues, like leukemia, get into the blood. And again, it's just an over-proliferation of cells that doesn't get regulated because they cannot recognize when they've built enough. It's immature cell growth. It's no different than allergies. Same thing, hypersensitivity, only it affects a different chain of your biochemistry. So funny how now psychoneuroimmunology and other things are starting to connect the dots here and starting to see that, hey, cancer isn't the enemy. Cancer needs to be secured, not cured, secured, put back into its container because it's on the growth side, not the repair side, the growth side. I just had this discussion with a client this morning. Cells do three things, okay? They grow, they repair, and they die. And if they don't die in their pre-programmed time period, then they become a problem, right? When you have trauma, like I had trauma, you have necrosis, right? Not cell lysis, necrosis, where they don't die. They hang on for dear life and they try to repair and they can't. And you get a malformed tissue. Remember the old pap smear scare where they'd swab all you women and they go, cervical cancer? And then they started saying, actually, it's dysplasia.
Yep.
Sorry for radiating you and taking your ovaries out. Funny looking cells. We thought they were cancer. It's almost like the cop that shoots the kid with the rubber gun. You know, and this is the mentality. And so anyway, that's what led me to understand sort of the predisposition. We're going to be talking about stigmas in the beginning about how even in the healthcare community, which is a joke to say those three words together, how the healthcare community perceives cancer as the enemy, and that's why, you know, this is why even women today, that prevention thing, right? What's the biggest thing they try to prevent with women now?
Breast cancer.
Right, the mams. They run out for these mammograms, which
a
you could probably give a...
fight in my house almost daily about that.
And you could give a big story about it. I mean, the thing is that... It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. Is that... Is there a uniform, sort of a like a union label standard for the shape of the cells there? That they're gonna a lump is a lump is a lump. There's fibrocystic stuff. There's a zillion ways for that thing to come up with.
I have that.
Just like the Pap smear. Just like there's a lot of false positives with those tests. They've gotten better with the technology over the time, but the thing is that it bugs me. It bugs me because it that prevention thing bugs me. You can't prevent the inevitable. Tissues are going to age, right? Cells are going to go through replacement, but it's the rhythm. The rhythm is the thing. The rhythm is the thing. They have to replace on a schedule that makes them create the new cells with the same formula that they created the old cells. Otherwise, you get dysplasia. You get a copy of a copy of a copy. It's really about degeneration, not disease, degenerative disease. That's what they used to call it, cell degeneration, regeneration, degeneration. But they got away from those terms because they give you both sides of the wave, and cancer can't be the enemy anymore. Okay? So you think about growth and repair. Growth is going up the roller coaster. Repair is coming down the roller coaster. And then when it's in the trough, it replaces and replenishes, and you make new cells. That little rhythm has a time period for every tissue in your body. Okay? If it's your stomach, it's every 5 days. If it's your bones... It's every 7 years, and things like that. So it's like, that's why it's like people don't understand. Like, even your little ligaments, every 2 weeks they're replacing. Your
really?
Red blood cells every, yeah. Your red blood cells every 120 days.
Well, is that why, with the pink eye, you gave me some time frame for the capillaries?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because all these things have, see, this is the stuff that the old squatting little Indian there, Deepak, he talked about it. He's political now. He was talking about the whole Indian thing, the terrorists the other night. The contract in the economy. The guy's on there. He's an expert on everything now. He's an endocrinologist, for God's sakes, but he knows everything. Drink the urine. He wrote a book, Angel's Body, Timeless Mind. It was all about tissue kinetics, which I can't understand if they can get into genetics, right, which is another false god of cancer. It's never the genes. It's the genetic expression, which gets regulated by your protein metabolism, which is a whole other subject. God, I hate this cancer stuff. They just distort it. It's like the bad guy in wrestling. You know, they have to make him, Rowdy Roddy Piper, look bad. So it's like, so what happens is that, you know, when they start creating this monster, they have to keep feeding the monster, because otherwise the radiation and all the other stuff, all the interventions, all the heroic interventions they make, don't add up to a hill of beans. Now, if you keep throwing people off these rhythms, these tissue kinetics, they're going to make cheap, funny-shaped cells that aren't going to function well as tissues. You know, it's like Russian dolls. You know, you got the cells, tissues, organs, all the way up, right?
Right.
And it's that dysregulation. Again, we're talking about an environment here. It's that dysregulation that throws them off the rhythm and doesn't allow the cells to communicate well, and you get that issue. You get that expression, so to speak. And again, Now you're talking about things that are epigenetic, how you adapt to the genetic environment that you came into with the equipment you had to rebuild the cells. So anyway, it's like, you know, does lifestyle influence it? Yeah, but those things are like lighter fluid to the fire. It's already there. You have to have the rhythm, baby, living in the rhythm. And that's what's missing. They don't talk about that. So it's like when you see a player get injured in sports and they do, you know, a major knee surgery and he's back playing in 2 weeks. If you check that guy out in 6 or 7 years, he's got a chronic knee problem because he had no chance to make the tissue replace. He healed fast. Now, you can do things to accelerate the replacement cycle in the short term, like go in the isobaric chamber. Boy, love. Anyone want to donate an isobaric chamber? 646-478 847, I will crawl into it and come out in 2014. Because what happens is that your soft tissues, the connective tissues, the slings that you fall into, they heal and replace themselves very slowly, 500 days. All right, and they do it largely without blood supply because it's dealing with cartilage in your joints, and there's just not a lot of like oomph for that. And that's where all your memory gets locked into. So think about it. Everything that's happened to you in the last 500 days is still sloshing through your soft tissues. So anything that reminds it of trauma or any kind of insult or any kind of injury, it's going to trigger that physiological reaction. So we never quite reset the pins because we don't give ourselves the nurturing through that long period of time to really do the proper replacement. So what happens is people get relapsed and relapsed and relapsed and relapsed. They never get back to the doc. And this is what wears out the tissue over time and gives you a higher risk factor. Right? So it's like those are the things I wish we talked about. Now, you get into the blood stuff. You want to get into the blood stuff like the Adama talks about, you know, where a type A is going to be prone to this cancer, that cancer, and a type O. Again, you're still dealing with cells. You're still dealing with membranes, with little receptors. You're still dealing with communication problems. And you're going to have a predisposition. I love that word. A predisposition to that track, because that's what allowed your ancestors to survive. Cancer. Most of them, except for pancreatic and a couple others, are slow. It takes you years to die, not months. But because we've accelerated the repair process, we also accelerate the disease.
Oh.
And then if you understand, push a fat kid on a swing once in a while. He comes back with momentum. That's what happens. We keep trying from the outside to speed up nature, and nature says, okay, screw you. This was going to take 20 years. Now it'll take 20 months. We've swatted the beehive in the last 40 years. And then if you add in all the other lifestyle factors and everything else, it takes us out of our biological clock, and all the other stress factors that make us go stugatz by the time we're 35, yeah, you're gonna fry the onion pretty quick. So cancer is not an inevitability that it's going to kill you. It's an inevitability that you have to secure it. Keep the dogs on the chains. Alley-oop.
So what can we do then to ensure that we're doing everything to support our bodies so that our bodies keep the dogs on the chains?
Well, I don't know. The answer to that is blowing in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, again, you're talking about how do you treat something that, or treat, how do you address something that is inevitable, okay? Think about, just think about aging. Is aging inevitable? After the age of 30, you're supposed to decline in your performance about 0.5% a year, right? But we go real quick. You look at the top 10 biomarkers that people go, what's the age of disability? When I first got into practice, it was just under 70. Now it's cruising down around 60, age of disability. Right? We're aging quicker, and we're not getting healthier early on, and then you add all those other things I was talking about that weigh you down. So you have to get to the point where you do things that are biologically orderly, right? And, of course, in this culture, of course, it's not something that's going to travel very far, but something as simple as frickin' breathing, oxygen, and getting a rhythm with your breathing will then create a cellular respiration to get rid of its waste. Because if you bring oxygen into the system, it will get rid of the waste. It's a combustible fuel. Most of our cells have two problems. They have oxidative stress, and they also have a problem getting rid of their waste. All right? And that creates a sick cell. sick cell, sick tissue, sick organ, sick system, sick person. Right? So that's why it's like, how do you get this restored? You got to go back to the source. The source always becomes, well, what keeps you alive? Air, water, basic stuff. Nothing dramatic. But the thing is, how do you nurture that through time? Well, you have to have a lifestyle that's oriented towards the biology, not towards the culture. The culture will kill you. The culture is the vulture, as I used to tell people. Your culture is the vulture. Well, it's exploiting you. It's exploiting everything you do to self-medicate yourself back to the neutral point.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do it with anything you have. People do it with fluorescent lights to stay awake at night. Everything is that this stimulus. For all that stim, there's a response. And once you get to the point where the response is no longer going to be kind of, you know, orderly and coherent, you're going to get reaction. And when you get reaction, you're going to get reaction to reaction, compensation. Compensation leads to compromise, and compromise leads to dysfunction. It's just that simple. I feel like Regis, the Regis of health.
That was kind of Regis-like.
Yes, it kind of came through, a little Onto.
You got that Onto in there, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of came out like that.
That was good.
You know, now you look at some of the other cancers that are more kind of, they're not those cracks in the sidewalk ones that take forever. The ones that are kind of violent and bubble up. You know, like take skin cancer, something like that. That can happen, like, you know, pretty quick, right?
Yeah,
and
my father had that on his face.
Yeah, and that's because what happens is it's not so much those tissues that have been compromised, it's the support for those tissues. What supports the skin? Vitamin D production, liver. You know, all the other stuff that's underneath allows those tissues to have a little savings account so when they get exposed to those harsh environments, they can endure. If they can't, skin you alive.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, you know. And I always think of people that have the polyps on the vocal cords and the polyps on the colon.
Yeah.
Again, you're losing the shape. You're losing the shape of the integrity of the tissues. And the reason why is because of the chronic, over time, overstimulation in the same vector that causes that system to buckle. And when it buckles, it loses its shape, and you get dysplasia. You get dysplasia, now you're going to make a bad copy of a bad copy, you're going to get cheap function. They almost forgot that cancer's physical. They make it chemical. They make it blood-borne. They make it into the genes. Stuff. They get you spooked by things like MS is caused by a virus. What? All these things, they're just silly to me. Now, I know I've sounded like a somatic ranter over here, but the thing is, it's because they forgot the flesh is smart. They think the flesh is stupid. The allopaths think
stupid.
The flesh is stupid. The flesh is like an untamed animal that we have to beat into submission with drugs and radiation and pills and potions and lotions, and then it'll behave. All right, and I'll give you a little example here, because I'm fresh from the allopathic chambers myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had a wisdom. I love this word, oxymoron, a wisdom tooth that had overstayed its welcome, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I'm down to 26 teeth. My dental health is hilarious. We should do, when we get down to, well, next week is depression, but somehow we'll have to slip in something about gingivitis or something in there, I don't know, when we get deeper into the alphabet here, because it's one of those ones. Now, dentists, talk about like the squirrel with the rat PR thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dentists have parlayed cavities into valve disease in the heart, right? That's the big thing?
Yeah.
You got to take care of your teeth or you're going to get a heart attack. So they've scared you into brushing your teeth, thinking that, you know, if you get some cavities, you're getting a heart attack. And endocarditis, whatever they call it, you know, the disease of the valves, has to do with bacteria that nosh on your valves of your heart, and they think that that's coming from your mouth. And they don't understand these are all bacteria that live. They are tenants of the building. Now, if the landlord doesn't maintain the property, the tenants get a little uppity. You ever rent a car?
Mm-hmm.
Beat the shit out of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. So when you deal with your oral cavity, any cavity, actually, and you have basically a sewer of an environment in there, guess what? Shows up in the sewer, the ratinos. And it's a freaking frat party for them. Same as what happens in your belly with the yeasty beasties. I mean, it's literally just like, it's like the old taste buds in Saturday Night Live. Hello! They just have a big party on you. I gotta play this before I forget. This is the old Joe Jackson song. We'll play it in the background. I used to dance to this back in the 80s when they...
I've seen you dance.
Yeah.
You people out there really need to get that. You got to get it on
video
so we can show these people you dancing.
This is kind of a this is kind of a cha-cha I used to do.
You're doing it right now, aren't you?
I'm bop-bopping. Get the words?
Yep.
Hilarious. I used to sing this in Long Island Jewish. Everything gives you cancer. Yeah, I'd hum it on the elevator at Sloan Catering, too. Don't touch that.
You are something.
I had that attitude because I just didn't have any fear of it. And they, no matter what they did to scare me, I would just say, that white collar almost killed me. You can't scare me. And that's what I really want to get out there. Anyone's out there that just lost someone to cancer, it's terribly sorry, but like I said at the top of the show, eventually we all bring in the bowling shoes. It doesn't matter if it was a heart attack or the white car or the toaster goes in the bathtub. You're going to die. I hate to break it to you, but how are you going to live? That's really what I want to talk about on this dopey show, and anyone that I get knee to knee with here at Soma Space. How are you going to live with that? How are you going to face it? How are you going to face that truth and go, so what? I'm dancing. Surf life, as we say over here. You know, so that's really my spiel on cancer. I don't know if you had any more questions about it. We got 8 minutes to 7 minutes to schmooze. 646-478-4847. Anyone out there? Is there anybody out there? Is anybody alive out there?
They probably are.
Yeah,
they
anyway, well,
are.
You know.
They're
we used to have more archivers, and now everyone ignores us. And...
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
But anyway, that's I'll be blogging about it later on the blog we hate, the dailyprofiler.net. More cancer fun. One of my other songs that I sang, because talking about cellular health, I took from Stir Crazy. You'll see that on the blog we hate later. And like I said, the more you can have an attitude about it that, similar to your imagination, similar to the way you ruminate in your mind, the experience you have when you're awake has, just like the Matrix, it's got certain little crevices, little gaps where you could make some changes. And if you understand the principles we're talking about here on the show and you start applying them, like I said, breathe and move ain't going away. That never goes out of style. And there is no nutritional supplement for gravity. Zero.
Nope. I've been trying to fight gravity. I got on a scale today. I wanted to be on the moon, man.
Well, don't fight it. Fuse with it. It's there to support you.
Well, I stood backwards because I didn't want to see. And then I looked at my Philo trainer, Adrian.
Uh-huh.
And I knew it wasn't good news, so she just walked away and did her thing, and it was fun to say, okay, what happened, just to see how she was going to react.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy, she is something.
Levity is the answer for gravity. That would balance
That's
it
right.
out, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the thing, most of the stuff that we talk about in the show, especially you know, now that we're going through the allopathic alphabet, it has to do with fear. Almost anything you deal with when it comes to your health has to do with this fear that somehow your mortal being is going to be threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the perception of the threat and the preparation and the anticipation and the dread of that threat that wears you out. It isn't the actual experience of it. That's like nothing. That's like the little tip of the artichoke. The rest of it is all the pomp and circumstance and all the little, you know, all around it. But it's got nothing to do with how you're going to face it. Like I said, if you move through this, you know, like now we're getting into the flu season. Everyone's running around sticking themselves with flu shots. We're going to do a flu show first of the year. Talk about the flu. Again, another false god, another incomplete map, another one-sided story. They tell you all about that germ, but they don't tell you about the host. You got to have a guest and a host here, okay?
Right.
The organism is the host. And they used to, they stopped talking about it, they used to talk about opportunistic infections, not threats. You know, we had David Goodman on the night of the election. He talks about a lot of stuff he's going to be participating over on the blog We Hate, some of his brain articles. He sent me one today. I'll post up there.
He's something. I like him.
No, he's a radical eco. We're going to have an all-eco blog.
That's
Ecos are us. The eco circus. Basically, thumbing our nose at all these spooky ontos and all these frightened philos that every time they hear disease, every time they hear, you know, pandemic, they run up a tree and they hide, and they take their duct tape and their and they avoid Parmesan cheese, and it makes me nuts. So anyway, the real fast story about my tooth, because we're getting down to the end here.
Oh yeah.
All right, took the sucker out. Right, first he offered me about a zillion drugs. I mean, everything, painkillers, what I like, you know, some acid, anything you wanted. The guy was a virtual drugstore. He had it all around his waist like a Good Humor Man. You like some of this, some of this, some of this, some of this. I was like, Jesus Christ, dude. Let's take the tooth out. Now, he knocked me up with more Novocaine than I've ever had in my life. It's 3 days, 2.5 days later, I still got a huge block of blue in there.
Jeez.
But the tooth came out, and my body knew cell repair. It knew how to close the socket. It knew how to drain all the inflammation out. It knew how to repair the tonsils. It knew how to repair the ear canal. It knew how to do all of that because the obstruction, the space-occupying lesion, the obstruction to health, the limitation of matter, had been removed. Now, glory be to the allopath who sucked the tooth out of my head, right? Otherwise, I'm like Tom Hanks in Castaway, and I gotta do, use a coconut to get it out. You know, or John Adams, who had to go in there and pick it out himself. They had horrible teeth there in that century.
They really did.
Yes, that's what caused all their pain, that and the syphilis.
Well,
we'll get to
that.
Syphilis, and we get to S. We'll get into sexually STDs. Oh, that's going to be a great show.
Well, that's all my stuff, boy, I'll tell
you. Yes, the somatics of STD. Tag, you're it. Can't wait. So as we go through December, you know, we got, like I said, depression coming up next week. And then 2 weeks from now, get your couple therapy right here as we tackle erectile dysfunction before the holidays.
Now, there's
Hello.
A show.
Yes.
There's a show.
Yes.
I'm going to have all kinds of good sound waves for that one.
I think you just made one. Right?
Yeah. And, of course, you know, we'll have to do this one.
That's tomorrow.
you nailed Bill there.
Hey, well, Bill needed it.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today.
I love
all
that.
All right. Something just happened.
You know, he didn't make the worst person of the world today.
Oh, really?
No, he wasn't up there. Hannity was the main one today. We're talking about the Keith Olbermann show, people.
Yes, basically, we're doing our own show at this point. You bastards can call us, so we're just talking to each other. It's like that Jefferson and Adams thing. We just keep writing. Rejoice
That's right.
evermore!
That's right.
So Britney's better. The tree is up. Plexico's on the bench, and you know, it's Advent, baby. Jesus is coming. Yep. As we play the outro here. That is idiot. We can't play that. No, I gotta find.
You want to play something else? You better hurry up.
Yeah, I'll play this in dedication to Plexico. There we go. It's your birthday. Dance, Eco. It's your birthday. Oh, man. I don't know, Flax. Got to rethink that whole Cheddar Bob thing.
Uh-huh.
So thanks for joining us here on Soma Time, you rat bastard no-calling motherfuckers. How to get that in. Hey, if you made it this far in the show, you deserve it.
If you're one of my students, please ignore that.
Yeah, I'll see you next Tuesday. You can deal with me in person. I already
had
cancer, so I'm already a ghost. I'm Ghost Face Flippy. That's what I am.
That's right. Well, if anybody wants to come and see Dr. Mark do his thing in my classroom, let me know, and I'll get you in.
That's right. And we are available for parties December. Check out the site, Blog We Hate, and summerspace.org. And for everybody here, me and Professor Val and all you lovely listeners out there, sure have a light through the darkness.
Bye-bye.
See you next week with depression.